Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the Millennial Dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. We're doing a little bit of a on-the-fly recording here.
Mm-hmm.
Aubrey hates.
Going into the new year, just winging it.
That's what we do. So, so what we're going to talk about is reporting. So right here, if you're watching on YouTube or the video, you can see our reporting. But we do a good bit of reporting. And then obviously metrics are only as good as what you do with them. Yeah?
Yeah. Is that a Sully quote or did you get that somewhere?
That was pretty good. So if we don't look at the numbers and we don't identify them, then there's really no point in even keeping track of them. And it's really helpful to look at a couple of different things. So we're going to look at numbers today. We're going to talk about what we track, what we're looking at, and then how we will use that to redefine goals and what we're doing moving into 2023. How's it sound?
Sounds good.
Perfect. Okay. Hey, if you're not placing implants, this podcast is sponsored by 3D Dentist because that's what we teach and I need someone to sponsor it and I'd rather it be us. So we sponsor our own podcast at 3D Dentist. And if you're looking to place implants in 2023, please check us out, our digital implant continuum. We do everything from single implants to overdentures to full arch to sinuses to ridge augmentation, you name it. We probably teach it. 3D-dentist.com. Okay. Now, when you look at these reports, what's like the first thing you want to look at? Like as someone who runs the business, what metrics are you looking at or what are you trying to gain from these reports?
First thing that I'm looking at is as a business, production and collections, where we're at, you know, overall as far as...
Meaning where we're at from a standpoint of, expound on that.
If our goal is 415 a month, where we're at on that, if we're meeting our global business goals.
Okay. So you're looking at it from a top down.
Yeah.
Did we meet what we wanted to be?
Yeah.
We did in 2023.
We sure did.
We were probably over our goal by 10-15% or so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind talking numbers. I mean, our goal was 5.4 million. And what did we end up with?
Actually, no, it was 4.9.
4.9 million?
415 times 12.
I would have rounded up to 5. Let's say it was 5 million. And then we ended up at
5.8.
Which is great. Way, way higher than I thought we would be, honestly, given all the change and some of the stuff that we had to go through this year. So that's exciting. And then ultimately what we talked about the other day was we got to look back to know where we're going to go. Cause like this year we want to do 6 million and that's probably a low goal relative to our potential potentially, but we're going to have our first associate change. And so we just don't really know what that looks like. And so, yeah, I think that's a good goal. So I would be happy with getting to 6 million. So, okay, after that, then you top down, I guess, let's say we're not reaching goals. Where do you look? What do you start to look at?
So then we start running the procedure reports that show the breakdown of the different procedures and how much we're focusing time on based on the production or procedures that we're doing.
Perfect. So, and the one thing I would add to that is if you're a multi-doctor practice, then you start to look at, okay, are the individual providers hitting their goals? And even if you're not an individual provider, or multi-doc practice, but you're an individual doc with hygienists and whatnot, is do you have a goal for what does it look like to reverse engineer a $2 million practice? So let's just say a $1.5 million practice. If you've got a $1.5 million practice with two hygienists, what's a hygienist produce a month?
15,000.
15 grand a month in our office. So 15 grand a month times 12 is... 180 grand times two is 360 grand. So I'm 1.5 minus $360,000 means I need to be 1.14 if I'm the dentist based off those metrics. Because because hygiene is pretty fixed as far as what they can produce.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're not going to have a $20,000 month.
Or yeah, there's not a lot of fluctuation in those months.
I mean, what from a high end, about, we don't have those numbers, but off the top of your head, what's a high low on a hygienist on a month?
I would say 18 adjusted production is high and low would be 12.
So I don't want to get into this right now, but to me, that number right there is why we put so much emphasis on the hygienist understanding that their true value to us is not what they produce, but it's what they're able to co-diagnose and, you know, close the rapport and communicate that gets done on the doctor's side. Mm-hmm. Because their high end is, it doesn't even move the needle compared to what the dentist high end could be. Mm-hmm. That's an aside. So then you got, okay, well, you're a doctor. You've got your hygienist producing theirs. You're the provider and you got to get to 1.14 million. Then we look at, okay, well, what does that look like in a month? 1.14 divided by 12. That's $95,000 a month. And then $95,000 divided by four.
25 grand a week.
That's about 25 grand a week. 2375. So now we start to look at, okay, and see what kind of procedural mix do we need to do to hit that number? And I don't think that we do a good enough job of reverse engineering these things on a daily basis. And so, like, for instance, we do this with our associates because if Megan comes to me and is like, hey, I want to make X this year, then we're just going to reverse engineer it to what she needs to produce each month. And then we're going to set her schedule based off what she needs to produce in regards to that. So one of the things that becomes a big differentiator here when we look at our procedures, production by procedures, is that Megana, for example, how many days did Megana work?
Like it was 208.
208?
Yep.
And then how many did I work? 165. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty good. So I worked less days, roughly 43 less days, and I produced double what she did. Now that's nothing negative against her, but that's to give you an interest in the dynamics that procedural mix has. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Oh yeah.
Because when we look at her numbers, 50% of the dentistry that she did was crowns, mm-hmm. or larger case type dentistry. And 23% of her production came from exams and diagnostics.
Hygiene, yeah.
Wow. And for me, only 4% of mine came from exams and diagnostics. Mm-hmm. 41% of mine came from implants. So this piggybacks off my ad earlier, because if you want to move the needle more, getting into implants is a pretty significant one. Mm-hmm. We agree. I mean, both of our major producers being my dad and I, dad's was 31% of his production was implant related, 41% of mine. And then our other associate, Jackson, who his was 8% was implant related. Mm-hmm. And Megan's was 2%. So it's kind of an interesting procedural mix there that we see that how much implants move the needle in regards to that. Okay. What else do we track? What else do you like to look at?
I think specifically for Dr. Megan and Dr. Jackson, we're tracking time more so than procedures for them. So, you know, focusing more on them doing a lot or several procedures in one appointment versus, you know, splitting things up into multiple appointments. I think that helps increase their production rather than diving.
Production per appointment there?
Yeah.
That statistic? Mm-hmm. How many appointments they see and then their production. Yeah, I think that's important for everybody to realize because it's unrealistic to think that like every provider is going to just be able to throw up, you know, hybrids each week or 12 unit veneer cases or whatever. But really the bulk of our efficiency and production and growth as a practice has not come in. It's come with some level of advanced skill set, but more of just doing more and less visits.
Mm-hmm. And if you're a solo doc practice, you're going to have to see everything. So it's just prioritizing what you're doing.
You can't give it away.
Yeah. Being efficient with the time that you have.
So then we're trending here. We're seeing, okay, well, Megana's average was 578 production per appointment. Jackson's was 804. You think that's more procedural mix or is he doing more?
Yeah. His is higher because of he's doing more of the oral surgery side of things.
So it's procedure mix based. Mm-hmm. So that's a good statistic to look at is to see where do you fall and we're a PPO practice, but obviously, you know, Meg is at 578, Jackson's at 804. You know, I'm basically acting as a specialist with just doing more majority of larger case stuff. So mine's just under $2,000.
We can't look at your dad's.
An appointment, and we can't look at my dad's.
Because he sees too many appointments.
Is that a typo?
No. He just likes to help.
So let's talk about that. So, okay, just to give you all some frame of reference here, my dad's adjusted production was 1.5 million. My adjusted production was 1.5 million. So they're basically the same, roughly. My production per appointment, though, was 2,000 and his is 784.
Because he's seeing way more patients. in multiple columns.
Wow. So
don't go down that rabbit hole.
I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, other than that's to say that like running multiple chairs and or seeing more people doesn't necessarily do it, or he's having more.
Part of it too is that it is a little bit, and digging into the reporting side of things, reports are not, they're not.
They should make you
intelligent
ask
enough. Yeah. Intelligent yeah. enough to know the ins and outs of how your software is set up too. So his name is going to be on more appointments because okay. he's the default provider. So a lot of that is skewed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's helpful, I think.
But it does force you to dig into it, and that's yielded a productive conversation with
him. What I want you to think about, what I would encourage you to do to have some actionable steps from this conversation is you finished the year, you take you run a production by provider report and or procedures by provider, and you start to see where your dentistry is coming from, correct?
Yep.
Now, if you take it one step forward, you would even start to see how much time it's taken you to do it. And if you've done Mastermind with us, or you've probably heard on other maybe T-Bone's podcast or other episodes, where we talk about taking an inventory of your services, an inventory mm-hmm. of what you offer, meaning that like Sully's business only offers X, Y, and Z. So to give you perspective, like I won't do fillings anymore. And so fillings is not a service that you can get from me. So you start to outline what are the services that you can provide. For instance, Megan doesn't do implants, so implants wouldn't be one of her services. And so you list out all the services that you provide. You then list out the production associated with each service and how much time it took you to do those services. It's a great exercise, because what it really allowed me to do is when you start to look at it, you'll see that like, okay, well, let's use Megan for an example. I bet her minor restorative, which is 185 grand, probably takes her, she spends 50% of her time doing something that only gets her 15% of her adjusted production.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good starting point too, for her to see, okay, this is how many of this procedure I actually did. How do we divide that over the course of the year to then create your blocks on the schedule too? Because ultimately that's how you're using your inventory to block your schedule.
Yes. You're using your inventory to set your schedule to hit a goal. It's all reverse engineering.
So if fillings aren't yielding the most production for you, then you don't want to have as many blocks for that as you would something else that would help balance out
yes,
your production.
At a very basic level, when we're looking at a one doc practice, you have to limit what you do. Otherwise, your time would get taken up with the majority of things that don't move the needle enough. Here's some things I find interesting, and they're not good things. When I like this to me is like a problem. Megana did 1,794 periodic exams. Jackson did 1,217. So essentially they worked the same amount of time, but Megana did 500 more exams,
mm-hmm.
almost 600 more exams. So like that to me would be a conversation that if Jackson wasn't leaving, that we would be having with him to say, hey, it would appear that either you're not pulling your weight, getting up, and or the team's not coming to you.
Or they are, but he's doing more sedation type, you know, procedures
maybe
or appointments.
He can't get up and not.
Yeah.
So you have to start to figure out. So like in November, he did 133 exams. Megan did 248. In December, he did 131 and Megan did 241. So these are challenges that we have because one, if she's doing that many exams, how well can the exams be?
And that's limiting her on the clinical side.
How thorough
side.
Can they yeah. be? She's having to get up more often. That limits her production. And so like that's a challenge that we have. And then you look at me. I mean, I guess I'm proud of this, but not proud of this. I did 64 periodic exams.
For the year.
For the year.
As opposed to... You said it, not me.
64 exams for the year. That's not great leadership.
But you did you do all of our consultations.
I try to do all the
comprehensive exams.
Comprehensive. So I did 276 comprehensive exams. For instance, and Megan did, where are comprehensive exams on her? Help me find
right
it.
Here, 373.
Well, she didn't
so
see
she's,
that.
Those maybe. Are coming in from hygiene. You're focusing on the consults for dentistry.
Yeah, but
for
that's
dentistry.
Still, I would still, that's still, that's high for what we'd like that to be.
Yeah,
and then
he
Jackson
did
200 and what?
11.
11. Yeah, so I did more than Jackson, and then Dad did
331.
331. I did 276. Megan did 373. And Jackson did 211.
Yeah.
Why do I care about that statistic, Aubrey?
Because your name's on the building for starters. So you want to be meeting patients and getting to know them.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't really care about that as much. And look, here's why I say this. As a business owner, do I want my business to be reliant on me, or would I like my business to function and run without me?
You want it to run without you.
I would prefer to not be the most integral cog in the wheel. And so if I'm the one that's having to do that for that reason, I don't love it from that standpoint. What would be another reason why I don't like it?
Treatment planning. Well, because you're great at treatment planning and we're—
Aha! Yes.
Training our associates to get there.
So this is the challenge that we have. So this is going to get into a little bit of, like, I think, helpful information. So when you're bringing on an associate, or whether you've got new doctors in your practice, to me, I really, really think that one of the worst things you can do is give all the new patients to the new dentist. Now, let me be very clear. Associates or new dentists or new graduates listening to this, one of the one things that, like, a consultant would tell you is, like, to ask in a new doctor interview is, like, well, who gets to check the new patients, or who gets new patients? And I think that's a bad question to ask, because as a business owner, I don't want them checking new patients because they're the least skilled at seeing the dentistry and communicating the value of the dentistry.
The flip side of that is that you and your dad are great at giving the dentistry to them still. So it's not a challenge of not right. filling their book with the new patients.
So yes. And I do a whole episode on this somewhere in here called Feed Your Associate First, that you should go listen to for both ends of the spectrum. Because to me, this is, like, that's one of the biggest keys to our success is, in my opinion, the dentist that should be doing the most checks should be the one that's the best treatment planner.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's that job, that the job of the practice and that dentist to then give away all the dentistry. And so, like, what sucks is, and I'll say, like, I'm definitely the best treatment planner in the office. Humble brag. I'm doing the third most exams for new patients.
Due to lack of availability.
Lack of availability, laziness, whatever the reason, I'm out of town, whatever the reasons are, but I'm not the one checking as many new patients as I should. So That's problematic. And even that does get into periodic evaluations, because there's still potential there. Mm-hmm. And so what I look at is, when I see my associate schedules not being filled, it's typically because either I haven't found things in new patient exams to give them, or it's because they're doing the majority of the checks. And therefore
can't be super thorough because they're having to do them quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what is funny is that my dad did 315 periodic evaluations to my 64.
I'd love to know how many steps he does in this building.
He takes a lot more steps and works a lot harder than I do in that regard. But our numbers would say be the same, mm-hmm. for whatever that's worth. Okay, what else you got? What else do you think is interesting here?
I mean, on the reporting side of things, just making sure our collections are staying consistent with our production is always good, that we're not lagging behind in that. I think also just cleaning up from the software side of things, making sure your codes are cleaned up, which is nice.
Yeah, like, that's to me something that I see here and I would like to do, because, like, there's just too many codes. And so I would just try to figure out, like, well, how do we get these codes down, or can we delete some of these codes or combine some of these codes, especially these malicious ones or whatever? Or do we even need to walk out these? I don't know.
Miscellaneous.
I don't like all these codes.
So some of the codes are necessary, but they're not necessarily helpful when you're doing your inventory checklist.
Yeah, which is what I want to do. Again, to find out, okay, well, where am I doing something that's not productive for me to do?
Things, too, as simple as, like, you know, seeing how much sedation you've done compared to the other doctors.
Yeah, let's look at that one.
You know, nitrous compared to other procedures.
So I did 122 IV cases, and my dad did 205. So he did a good bit more than me, but that would make sense because he sees typically more patients because mm-hmm. he does more the smaller medium surgeries.
Whereas Dr. Megan only did 15, you know, sedation.
I love
cases.
That. That was a good one to bring up, Aubrey.
Thanks.
So, like, we're going to meet with Megan during lunch today to talk about some things. And one thing that I want to bring up is when we look to her growth in the practice in year three, it will be year three,
mm-hmm.
is we've got two other doctors coming on this year. And so to me, a huge thing that's going to separate her from those other doctors and something we've got to see her do more of is sedation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge
Which
one.
Naturally leads to more quadrant dentistry because the patient's asleep and wanting
to do
more.
More and less visits. And yep. and she only did 15 cases. And that's, you know, and then again, Jackson did
57
non-intravenous conscious sedation for, he did like 50 or so cases, you know, compared to her 15. She did a lot more nitrous, 88 to those. So I think sedation's a great one to kind of look at. You know, we don't have hygiene reporting here, but what's one of the things you look at on hygiene?
There's a specific report in hygiene I love running that's separate from procedures, but it's treatment plan statistics.
So how much they're treatment planning from the hygiene.
Mm-hmm. Because that's where so much of their value comes from, that's important to track.
Do we see that? Do we see a discrepancy between our more tenured ones and the newer ones?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, if you're used to quoting quadrants or full arch.
Like, what was Vegas's treatment planned?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
I want to know that information. I'm
yeah,
curious
we have it
that.
On our spreadsheets.
Well, that's something we can look at.
Yeah. But I mean, to give you an idea, I do know that hygiene collectively treatment planned close to $1 million this year. But, you know, Jess, who's one of our hygienists, yeah, that's completely been pulled out of that, is doing that on her own, you know? So it's hard to.
Yeah, you got to understand. So that's the big part, I think, about numbers, too.
Understanding
the
reports. You
have to understand what the number is because, okay, that, yeah, so our hygiene department treatment planned $1 million. Well, if.
And closed it. That's another important detail. Treatment planned, scheduled,
treatment plan
and closed
that was,
it.
That was done.
Yeah.
Well, but like, okay, well then. I want to see that, okay, well, if 300,000 of that came from one,
mm-hmm.
and then the other 700 came from four, then we got to figure out, you know, what we need to do there to adjust those hygienists. So I'm curious on how many of y'all are doing this type of thing. Are you running these reports and digging in the numbers to see what it is that you did or didn't do, or you'd like to do more of? And then what I would tell you is that I think you should consider eliminating some procedures from your book of business that take too much time relative to the value that you're actually getting out of them.
Or spacing the blocks out more if it's not something that you can eliminate so that you're not doing them so frequently.
Yeah, because unfortunately we have to take fillings. You know, I'll use an example for me. Like pinholes one for me probably, but at some point it doesn't make sense, right? I mean, it looks like I generated, is it these two coals, pinhole code and the pedicle soft tissue graft?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did $3,800 in pinhole. So it's like.
Yeah, you only did a couple cases.
I only did a couple cases last year. So like, does that even make sense for me to do, to keep, to stock the material, to
I've
do it?
I've already taken it off of your report for next year, if that's okay.
Like, so I'm not doing it anymore?
Well, you can still do it. I'm just not going to run the report every month for it, for
yeah,
it not,
it's
not
gonna
show
be,
up.
It's going to be basically zero or very limited. But yeah, it just isn't. It obviously isn't part of my focus. Whereas when you look at, I mean, implants, I mean.
Yeah, I think reports just help generate conversation. I don't think it's something that you have to look at it, you know, with a grain of salt sometimes and not go off on tangents. But it definitely helps create conversation with each department, the doctors individually, the providers, you know, on the hygiene side of things. And then even ortho, sleep, you know, those are things that definitely move the needle for a practice that are good to be tracking.
Yes, they are. How do we get me to 100 arches this year, Aubrey?
We have them already blocked on your schedule.
100 arches. 100 arches divided by 12. That's 8.3 a month.
And that's how many blocks you have.
I have 8.3.
You got 8. So but you can do 4 a day.
I have 8.
2 arches.
You're saying I've got 8.
Full day surgeries.
So
you could do 2 patients.
So I can make up for it.
Yeah.
In the thing if I'm doing a double.
Yeah, there's cushion. That's assuming you don't take off any more work than what I already know about.
We'll see about that. That probably won't be the case. But, well, I hope this was helpful. This is a little bit kind of a glimpse into, it was on the spot, but, you know, hopefully it was some helpful information as far as like how we're looking at reporting. And then, look, it's Monday at 11 a.m. and we're recording. I did 2 consults this morning. Those consults came from direct marketing. One was through a magazine. Mm-hmm. I think the first one was through our magazine. That was a $15,000 close. The second one was going to be a $50,000 dual arch case from our digital using progressive implant marketing. It's just a funnel. I mean, you got to create the need, create the volume, have time to them come in, have the systems in place to have someone available to see those patients, the doctor be able to do good exams. They may take longer, us to plan, and then ultimately the schedule capacity to then do those cases. And I think so much of that is because I've shrunken down my inventory to get so much of the things that don't move the needle off my schedule. And so instead of me having to do a single crown or fillings or whatever it is right now at 11 a.m. on a Monday, I can meet with you, look at these reports, get strategic, and try to now make decisions or tweak things that do move the needle way more than the dollar amount of production that I would have got. And so another thing I kind of like to see you maybe look at doing this year is, I think a great place to start would be trying to block some administrative time into your schedule that you don't see patients. You know, maybe it's and I would tell you in the morning's the best time. If it's the afternoons, you'll leave. First thing in the morning, I think is the best. But I think if you could block 2 hours a week or 2 hours every other week or something of that nature to start and to use that time to work on your business, I think it can help you make 2023 the best year that you've got.
Yeah, especially kicking off, you know, right out of the gate. If you can block some administrative time to run your reports, look at your schedule. If you're the one as the doctor doing those things, I think the sooner you can do that, the better. That way you're setting up your entire year for success.
Work smarter, not harder.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.